Hello there. Just a thought. As we're getting closer to the holiday and gift buying season, keep in mind soccer90.com. It is a great place to shop for any type of gear for all your favorite clubs and teams from all over the world. Looking for a messy PSG jersey? A Chelsea jersey with Pulisic on the back. How about a Ronaldo Manchester United jersey? Got it. Soccer90.com has shirts and gear from clubs and national teams from all over the world. And if you happen to be up by Frisco, go check out the actual Soccer 90 store at Toyota Stadium right next to the Hall of Fame. It's a great place to visit and see all this stuff in person. And please don't forget, when you're done shopping at checkout, use the code KICKAROUND to get 25% off your order. Go check it out, soccer90.com.
It's time for the Kick Around, the Ticket's weekly show all about soccer. It doesn't matter if you're new to the sport, don't worry. This is The Tick. We're just kicking it around. Now, the Ticket's Gam and Tam, Andy Swift and Peter Welpton.
Hi-dee-ho, P1s, and welcome to The Kick Around. Normally Saturdays, never mind. Well, let me try to explain. It's not Saturday. Well, this is the podcast version where you, the good P1s, get to sit around, talk soccer, and all that implies. You can also find us on our website, thekickaround.com. Hi, for those unfamiliar or new here, my name is Peter, and joining me in just a few minutes will be my soccer-talking BFF, Andy Swift. Okay, so here's the deal. Because The Ticket is contractually obligated to broadcast a variety of college and bowl games and NFL Saturday games, the broadcast live version of this show, The Kick Around, is preempted, bullied, pushed out of the way, pretty much for the, oh, and also because Christmas and New Year's fall on Saturdays, we're probably done live for the rest of the year, and you won't hear a live show again until after the turn of the calendar. But because we think you loving P1s need your soccer talking and count on us for that, we're going to record podcasts like this one, and you'll be able to find them on our website or wherever you get pods. So the lineup for today will dial up Lars Siverston live from London, England to talk about the weekend's action in the Premier League. But first, live from Portland, Oregon, a guy who's about to attend his 26th MLS Cup in a row. And yes, that would be all of them. My soccer talking BFF, Andy Swift.
Hey, Peter, how are you? I haven't been to everyone yet. I still have a few hours left.
That's true. So you are on the
press. I have to make it out there.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, fair enough. You may
elements. You
may
we got a battle of the elements today,
that's
Peter.
Right. You may get kidnapped and turn and never make it to Providence Park, right?
That is the least of my worries today. I got to get out there. I got to walk to the stadium in like 20 mile an hour winds, 45 degree weather, heavy rain. Pray for me, Peter.
Yeah, so it does appear that the weather for MLS Cup is pretty shady. In fact, I think, as a friend of mine from Portland actually said, it's actually pretty crappy even for Portland's standards.
So that's saying something.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll be pretty. And you know, I was thinking about this. Now, I don't know if it's a function of just more wind than rain, but Providence Park actually sits really low over the water table. That's why Providence Park is turf and not grass, is because there is the water table is so shallow under what used to be that old baseball stadium is they claim they can't grow grass easily there because of how easily it floods or something like that. And I did wonder if there was any danger that the field may get flooded today if it's raining as bad as they say it is.
Yeah, I think it's raining. The problem is it's raining hard and continuously for several hours. But, you know, I think they probably prepare for that kind of weather here
you
in
hope
Portland.
So,
you know, they probably took that into account. And I would think, too, the part of the reason they have the turf is because it rains so much in Portland, and turf just holds up better if you play in a climate of heavy rains. That's why in Costa Rica, a lot of the stadiums have turf now.
It's because of rain.
Yeah.
Oh,
mm-hmm, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I thought it was just to mess with Americans during World Cup qualifying.
No, that's probably secondary. Oh. Primary is get their league games in.
That's a fringe benefit.
Right.
Okay. So just to remind everybody, explain this. You, like, I think last year somebody did an article trying to find and list the number of people that have attended every single MLS Cup. And was it Stephen Goff from the
Washington Post.
And he came up with three MLS and kind of quasi.
It was originally seven, and Michael Lewis, the journalist, wasn't going to be able to go, so that came down to six. And it was Mark Abbott, who's the deputy commissioner at MLS, and then me, you know, another person that had been going to all of them, for the most part on a professional level, and then four fans, or three fans. So he found out that two of them were going to go on to Columbus, that one or two of the other ones weren't able to go. And then, of course, Abbott and I continue to go. So we think it's down to five, maybe four.
So that would have been last year.
Yeah, right.
And now Mark Abbott is retiring. So
he is, but next year. And, you know, I figure he'll continue to attend as a guest, an invited guest for a few years after. But you never know. And I don't think he'll feel as much pressure to go to these as I do now, because I am holding out, Peter. I'm somehow going to make it to, I'm going to be the last standing person to have been to every one. I've now made it a goal.
You are Major League Soccer's version of Lamar Hunt's widow.
Because she's made every Super Bowl, correct?
Yeah, she's been to every Super Bowl. Right.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah. So yeah.
There you go. Good company then.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right. Well, so what I'm hoping for, Andy, is that we get to record something later this afternoon after MLS Cup, so you can kind of give everybody a download on the atmosphere and the scenes and what happened during that
game.
Sure,
yeah. Yeah. Fun, yeah.
I did want to take a minute, though, to see if you spent time in the hotel room this morning out in Portland watching Liverpool's squeaky bum time against Aston Villa today.
I did. I decided to stay in my cozy, warm hotel room as opposed to just walking around in the rain. I stayed and watched the Liverpool match, which, man, and I'm assuming you were able to watch it as well.
I watched it via Goal Rush, because that is the single best part of NBC having rights to this, is that they do give us that option to focus on one game, and it just happened to be Liverpool-Aston Villa, and then flip around as action is happening and the other games going on at the same time, and that's what I was doing today.
Yeah, so a frustrating game for a Liverpool supporter to some extent, because, you know, it was a clear domination, especially the start of the second half up until they scored their goal. It was all Liverpool. I mean, it was a siege, but the frustrating part is what happened after Mo Salah's PK, and they took that 1-0 lead, how they just couldn't put the game away. And then it was emergency defending on Liverpool's part for, 20 minutes at the end, 15 minutes?
Yeah, there was a bit of craziness, especially that one instance when Alisson came out.
Man, I think Liverpool got lucky there that, A, that they didn't score on that, and two, did you think maybe that could have been called a PK?
No, I didn't. I mean, I could look. I wouldn't have surprised me if they had, but I didn't think it was. And I think that would have made all the Liverpool fans flip out. But I do wonder. I'm just wondering from your point of view, did you have any kind of emotional reaction to Steven Gerrard returning as a manager for an opposing team?
Once he was hired by Villa, you knew it was going to happen. It happened a little bit more quickly than I thought. I hadn't looked at the schedule. And so when it got announced, you know, when I found out, oh, yeah, they're playing, it happened kind of quickly in my mind. But,
yeah.
he can't be Liverpool forever. He will be as a player. He's forever, you know, one of the Liverpool greats. But, you know, he's a good manager in his own right. And who knows, one day he might come back to Liverpool to manage. And, you know, we're all happy he's learning with some other teams to crust right now.
I think you're sandbagging a bit, Andy, because I think it's pretty clear he will end up being probably the next manager at Liverpool, Jurgen Klopp admitted. And I do wonder, as a Liverpool fan, and as much as everybody loves and adores and depends on Klopp, is it weird to have this thing of Steven Gerrard dangling out in the ethernet of he's the anticipated next guy? That to me seems a little bit weird.
It does. I think it's a bit unfair for Klopp, but I think nobody wants to make the change now. Everybody's fully on board with Klopp. He's done great things with Liverpool. We don't want him to leave. I think supporters in general, nobody's saying, oh, let's get Gerrard in there instead of Klopp. I mean, it'd be nice to have Stevie come in after Klopp leaves, but nobody's rushing to move on Klopp. So It is weird, but it's just kind of what happens when you have a presence like Gerard, kind of lurking in the shadows and ready to take over. But again, I think it's great that he's learning how to manage with other teams before he comes on to manage Liverpool.
Hey, as a Liverpool fan, are you worried about Regonk coaching my team now? Has that put the fear of God into you?
Well, you know, the one fear, more than anything, the fear is that Man United will be back. And so that adds another team, right, that is going to make the league top heavy. And then we're adding Newcastle to that. So, right. You know, we're going to have Newcastle, United back to where they were. And then the usual suspects that have been good lately. So I just don't know, like, when Pep leaves, will City stay where they are? They'll have a lot of money. Maybe they will. Chelsea, you know, clearly they're going to be good for a while. Liverpool, you know, we hope that the streak continues, that, you know, that we're good with Klopp. But it's getting heavy. And now the Hammers are really a really good side. So I think it's the Leicesters, right, that worry, and the Evertons, and those that are kind of on the fringe of trying to be in that top tier teams. Man, it's going to get really difficult for those teams to stay competing for those European spots now.
Heavy is the crown, right, Andy?
Yeah.
All right. Let's before I let you go, because I know you've got breakfast or something to go eat and take photos.
No, Portland coffee.
Oh, Portland, yeah. Hey, Blue Star Donuts, dude. Those are the best donuts I've ever had in my entire life.
I'll look for them.
Oh, they're fantastic. It's like French pastry in donut form. It's exquisite.
Nice. Food scene is good here, by the way.
It is. And it's actually, and they're actually better. And I know I'm going to catch a lot of crap for this, but they're actually better than the Voodoo Donuts. Blue Star Donuts. Trust me on this. They are so good. Okay, so let's go back real quick to MLS Cup. NYCFC. Portland, I have to admit, every time I see an article state that this is the first time Portland has hosted MLS Cup, it just grinds my FC Dallas gears ever so much, because it's like, oh, they've been in so many MLS Cups, they just haven't hosted one yet. They've won it, they've been to it, they've done everything.
It's their third, right?
I think it's their third. Yeah.
Yeah. And, yeah. Well, you know, from a U.S. soccer fan or supporter, we were all waiting for Portland to be able to finally host an MLS Cup, right? It's too bad the weather is going to, I don't know if it'll dampen a little bit the atmosphere. Might, we'll see. But, you know, it's one of the great venues in MLS
in the country.
It's so good. And I think it's nice that they get to finally host an MLS Cup. You know, it's good for their fans.
You know, my wife and I went and saw Portland and Seattle play against each other. Good Lord, it's probably been 6 years or so ago. And it was the best soccer experience I've ever had in this country. And it was not that dissimilar to some of the experiences that we've enjoyed over, you know, traveling to Europe. Yeah. And that was before they added the additional 5,000-6,000 seats on the far side, on the you know, not visitor side, but that side of the stadium. I can't imagine how crazy that place is with another 5,000-6,000 people in it. It'll be great today. I'm very jealous you're there.
Yeah, a little bit. I think it's enclosed a little bit better too, so the noise kind of stays in the environment a little bit more. Did you do the? Did you walk with the supporters when you came?
No, we were staying at a hotel in downtown, and we decided to take the little shuttle train, and then we got off early. And then we walked over from there. And I always found it very funny that I was just maybe about a mile away from the stadium, and it took me maybe 7 minutes less than it does to take me to drive from my house to Toyota Stadium.
It's
such a, you know, it's a train and traffic and crowds and everything. It's the atmosphere is fantastic. It really is.
And for where I am, and probably for you, where you were too, from downtown, it's about a 20-minute walk, which isn't bad at all. I mean, especially if the weather's nice, it's a summer day. And it's kind of a neat thing to walk with the fans. They all kind of, you know, kind of like Seattle does as well. But today I may just do the max, which is the train. Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, in every way, shape, and form, the whole Portland MLS scene is exactly what every other MLS club, either quietly or outwardly, wishes their experience was like. It's pretty great.
Out, I'm looking out my window now, and I see the rain coming down, and it's coming down at a 45 degree.
Oh,
nope.
No.
It's no more like 90 degree angle.
Oh,
yeah.
It's, no. Yeah. You need to take some video of that so we can tweet it out okay. on the account, Andy.
Right,
I'll try.
If I get my hands out of my pocket, maybe I will.
We need some in person, content, please, sir. Yeah. All right. So do you now? I also want to say this before, and by the time anybody hears this, the game will have long been played mm-hmm. and everything. I think this is going to be now, pending that the weather doesn't turn this into some sort of like ice bowl kind of deal in terms of it just dominating the game and affecting it so badly that it just becomes almost unplayable. Mm-hmm. I think this is a great matchup. I really like NYCFC. I think they're a really fun possession based team to watch. Portland is their own thing. The fans. Do you have a prediction of the result today?
No, I don't. It's a really hard game to predict. And, you know, truth be told, I haven't followed MLS as closely as I have in years past this year. But, you know, just watching the playoffs, I think it's a toss up today. And you got maybe a little bit of an advantage in Portland because they're playing in front of home fans. NYCFC is a really good team. If you've seen them play this, you know, they beat New England. They beat a depleted Columbus team because of the COVID issue. But, you know, I think it comes down to which team is going to handle the elements better, which team is going to be able to play in the rain, wet field conditions, and just get over that and just play some decent soccer. I think that's the team that's going to win.
Okay.
And you, who knows which team that is, right? Until we see it.
Yeah, but that's not a prediction, Andy.
Okay, 1-0 Portland. How about that?
That's funny. That's exactly what I was going to predict.
Yeah, I mean, if you had to predict something, I think that's the logical prediction.
Yeah, all right.
Anything can happen.
Well, I hope you enjoy your Portland coffee. I hope you enjoy the sights, the sounds, the experience. You are everybody's hero, Andy, for attending every single MLS Cup.
I represent the people, Peter.
You do. You represent.
I'm here representing the people.
The MLS loving P1. All
that's right.
Seven of them. So have a great time, and I look forward to speaking to you in a few hours afterwards, and we'll add that to this version of the podcast. But I'm going to go talk to Lars now about today's Premier League
nice.
Action. All right.
Yeah. Tell Lars I said hi.
All right. Enjoy it, Andy. Hokey-dokey. Now, I know just mere seconds ago, I promoted the fact that Lars Sivertsen was going to join us to talk about the weekend's action in the Premier League, but we recorded that yesterday, Saturday, and since then, we have found out that Lars has taken ill. Now, he's not in the hospital, and it's not COVID-related, but his voice is pretty shot, and he just didn't feel up to it, and we relented and decided to let him rest so he'll feel better. Especially as we get into the congested Christmas fixture, because we're going to need him at that point. So better save him for when we really, really need him. So hopefully you, the good P1, will put up with me running through the weekend's action solo. And if you don't feel like listening to me prattle on for the next few minutes, just fast forward for those interested in hearing Andy's post-MLS Cup stories, including being very close to the guy who threw the beer can and hit the player in the head. He was literally 20 feet away from that dude, and he'll tell that story. So just fast forward a little bit if you don't want to hear me talk about Premier League for a few minutes, and you'll eventually find it. All right, so the big headline of the weekend is all three top teams end up winning their games via second-half penalty kicks. It starts off with City hosting Wolves. Now, City was largely frustrated with both the way the Wolves were set up and their antics. Lots of time wasting, lots of, ow, that hurts. Hold on, let me make sure I'm all put together and stuff. But really, the game largely turned when Jimenez, the Mexican striker, picked up a double yellow late in injury time of the first half with the most ridiculous CONCACAF-style silly foul to kind of kill off a counterattack. That's a yellow. And then he dawdled about trying to kick the ball away and did some other stuff and eventually prevented a restart and got a second yellow and about 30 seconds later and was off. And I'm very confused by the fans and coaches' reaction to all of that because that really put Wolves behind the eight ball and they really struggled. Although I will say City, up until they finally got the penalty kick halfway through the second half, didn't always necessarily look as dangerous as you think they would when they have a man advantage. And then, of course, it was a handball call in the box. Yao Matinho, the ball comes off, hits him on the underside of the arm, but it's outstretched for looks at it, calls the penalty kick. Sterling converts it, shooting it down the middle. City now has only dropped 4 points in their last 10 games, and they are now on a 6-game winning streak. And Wolves now have lost two in a row and not won in their last four. The crazy game of the weekend was Chelsea 3 leads to lots of drama at Stamford Bridge. A very testy, odd game. It felt like there was going to be a fight breakout between Rudiger and somebody. Eventually, it kind of did at the end of the game. Leeds fell behind, tied the game, took the lead, allowed Leeds to tie it, and then got a penalty kick themselves with a bad defensive decision and foul by Click in injury time on Rudiger, I believe is who it was. And Jorginho converted his second penalty kick, and Leeds ended up getting 3 points, but something's not right. They have now given up 8 goals in their last 3 games. And they really needed this win because, remember, they lost in that big surprising loss last week to West Ham and then drew against Zenit in Champions League. They just haven't looked quite right lately. Tuchel, will probably get fired next week by Abramovich, as you know. And then the other weird leader of the pack having to depend on a penalty kick, Liverpool hosting Aston Villa. It was the return of Stevie Gerrard and... goodness gracious. Now, he's missing Origi, Firmino, and Jota all have various levels of injury. So Oxlade-Chamberlain ends up coming on as a false nine. Villa really frustrated. It was the return of Stevie Gerrard, which is weird in itself. He is the greatest Liverpool legend of all time. He's now coaching the other team. And they, like Wolves did to City, Liverpool looked a little out of sorts and everything, but it did end up taking a penalty kick. Mo Salah converted it. But I will tell you, one of the greatest pieces of entertainment in all of the Premier League, or just soccer, period, is whenever Martinez, the goalkeeper for Aston Villa and also Argentina, is in goal for a penalty kick. He is fantastic with the mental games. He's always fun to watch, and you always think he may just get in somebody's head, but no, Salah scored the goal and they end up winning that game 1-0. Now, the rest of the weekend, I can't tell you what's going on with Arsenal. It's weird. Arsenal's... First off, they got the Aubameyang issue where he was suspended because I guess he returned from a trip too late, so he got suspended. That relationship really has started to turn, and you start to wonder if he's the new Mesut Ozil of Arsenal. It won't surprise anybody if he's gone in January. But good Arsenal as a team returned at home against Southampton. It opened up as Arsenal broke Southampton's press. Ramsdale to Tomiyasu to Saka to Lacazette scored a nice goal. Odegaard scored again. Really nice player. And Gabriel filled it out as Arsenal ended up beating Southampton 3-0. And then Manchester United really struggled at Norwich. Norwich is such a team I really have a weird affection for. Norwich was depleted. Dean Smith has really improved this team in many ways. They were extremely organized. They lost the center back when Ronaldo fouled a guy. After he turned the ball over, he kind of ran him up from behind. He popped his shoulder. Not Ronaldo, the defender. He went out, so they had to go to a guy that had only played like 10 minutes of Premier League action. But you know what? Norwich stood very tall, really gave Manchester United all sorts of trouble. Man, United looks all kinds of out of sorts and wonky as Ragnit is trying to sort things out. I don't know how this is going to get solved. They really should have just mowed through City, Norwich City, but they didn't. But it did come late in the 75th minute. There was a clear foul in the box. Dean Smith would tell you otherwise on Ronaldo. Ronaldo converts it, and that ends up making it 1-0 for Manchester United. Now, just a side note real quick, because we are a Dallas-based show. On Norwich's bench yesterday, Saturday, with Jonathan Tompkinson, who is a center back from the Dallas area. He played for Solar, and in 2019, he left this area and went and has been playing for Norwich's youth teams, and he's the captain of their U23 team. He was on the bench, and when I said that that center back got hurt, I thought Tompkinson was going to get his Premier League debut, but he did not come on the field. But just keep an eye on that. It's cool to know that there's another Dallas kid playing in the Premier League that you may not be aware of. And so just so you know. All right. So there were games today as well. As you know, Tottenham was canceled due to the COVID outbreak. And that is another storyline that is breaking today. Manchester United and Aston Villa both have been reporting outbreaks of COVID in their ranks as of today, Sunday. And both teams' games coming up midweek are now in danger of not getting played. We'll probably learn more later this afternoon or tomorrow. But keep an eye on those stories. West Ham, you know, everybody's favorite story at this point, because that is, they have been somewhat of a surprise. They dropped an odd one today. They didn't lose, but they went to Burnley and only got a draw, not the result they were looking for. Newcastle, man, this is one to keep an eye on. They go to Leicester today. Leicester blasts them 4-0. And Newcastle now, with all their new ownership and everything, are buried at the bottom of the table. I mean, this is something to consider. Newcastle actually is tied with Norwich on points. Now, they're ahead on goal differential, which is ridiculous because their goal differential is minus 17 and minus 24, respectively. But Norwich has actually won one more game than Newcastle. So if you have this weird sense that Newcastle's season isn't quite as bad as Norwich's, no, actually, it's pretty bad. It would be fascinating to see what would happen if this new nation-state-owned Saudi Arabian team had to play its first full season in the championship first before coming back up. But good Lord, they're going to buy a whole bunch of players in January, aren't they? And at the time of this recording, it is halftime of Crystal Palace and Everton. Man, Rafa Benitez looks in all sorts of trouble as Palace has scored at Selhurst Park to take the lead in the first half. Everton is playing way too defensively and very weird. It's not good scenes. And man, you just feel like Rafa may not make it through Christmas. And if they do fire him, I have no idea in the world who would take that team over. So at the end of the weekend, minus the Palace-Everton situation, City's in first with 38, Liverpool in second with 37, Chelsea on 36 points in third. Now, West Ham's in fourth. They have now dropped two more points and are now a full 8 points behind Chelsea on 28. Manchester United in fifth with 27, Arsenal with 26. Spurs with 25 points, but now with two games in hand, and you do begin to wonder when they're going to play those games, because that one European game has to be played that got canceled this week, has to be played before the end of the year. Their schedule is going to get really wonky here pretty quick. Leicester in eighth with 22, Wolves with 21-9, and Brentford in 10th place. Man, we're right at Christmas, and the Bees are in the top half of the table on 20 points. And then at the bottom, Burnley, Newcastle, Castle and Norwich are all in the relegation zone, with Norwich only 2 points out, or excuse me, with Watford only two points out at 17th. All right. When we come back, we'll get back in touch with Andy Swift with an interview we recorded Saturday after MLS Cup. He was at the game, his 26th. Yes, he's been to all of them. And man, he's got some stories to tell for one of the best MLS Cup finals in the league's history. And we'll do that next year on the Kick Around. And now, live once again, post-game. I'm kind of disappointed he's back in his room and he's not out in the mad scenes around Providence Park. Andy has returned from just attending his 26th consecutive MLS Cup. Yep, that means all of them. And Andy, NYCFC won, Portland won, New York wins on penalty kicks. And boy, howdy, that was an entertaining MLS Cup if there ever was one.
Yeah, it was fun. It was really fun being in that environment, that stadium, and those supporters, you know, and you've been there, so you know. We're used to them having a strong supporter section as it compares to other teams, like the specific section of supporters. It's large. But what Portland has is the whole stadium, all 25,000, are really into it, like the supporters. You know, yeah. Some stadiums, it's just a supporter section that is loud and sings. In Portland, unlike most stadiums in MLS, you get all the fans into it like that. And it's quite, and, you know, it really is quite the atmosphere.
Yeah, I can't encourage anybody listening enough to take up the opportunity to go see a game at Providence Park in Portland. Just any random MLS regular season game, or if you can find a special one like a Seattle Derby game or a playoff game, that's even better. But when the Timbers Army strikes up their one song, kind of their theme song, which is done to Twisted Sister's We're Not Gonna Take It. It is spellbinding to hear them all sing that. It is so great.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I have to give the NYCFC fans, their supporters, kudos because they came in good numbers. I, you know, maybe 500, which is not bad for a, you know, a trip they had to plan in a week or less than a week.
Yeah.
And then cross country, you know, they had to get from all the way from the East Coast all the way to the West Coast. So that was a good showing.
Yeah, it was. I was trying to do the math in my head. I forgot to do it before we recorded of like, what is the longest trip in the Premier League? It's probably Newcastle to Southampton, maybe. And what that trip is versus what the trip just from New York to Portland is one way, much less a round trip from the north end to the south end of England. It's, you could probably make that trip three or four times in the one trip it would take those guys to get from New York to Portland. So it is a big deal to make it all that way in one week, like you said. And you shot that video of the parade, of them marching to the stadium, and that was really impressive.
Yeah, you know, I was actually looking for the Timbers Army and their march to the stadium, and then I stumbled on the NYCFC fans. But I'm kind of glad I did because, you know, I'd hardly ever get to see the visiting team marching into in a road game, right, into the stadium. And man, they were loud, they were numerous, and they withstood the cold and rain, and they showed well. And you know, when MLS switched their format, remember, you know, it used to be like the Super Bowl that the venue was predetermined years ahead, or at least a year ahead. And over the last, what, I don't know, 10 years, the team that has the best record or the better record among the two teams gets to host the game. I like this this setup so much better because the atmosphere improves drastically. I remember, like, in the old days, if it would have been cold and rainy and 45 degrees, there's no way you sell that game out in a neutral venue.
And, well, yeah, and I remember Toronto in 2010 when we had to go to Toronto for Colorado, yes. Dallas, and we were freezing our balls off in Canada in like late November. It was ridiculous.
Yes, and then I remember then being in Toronto for two MLS Cups in a row after that when Toronto was actually playing in the game, and it was just vastly different. The stadium was full, atmosphere was great. And you know, kind of like we had today. So good on MLS for doing that.
Yeah, so the game was entertaining for large stretches. At least it was on television. Was it as entertaining in the stadium?
Oh, yeah, even more so, I would think, because of the atmosphere we just talked about. And it was. And it was end-to-end play. Now, I thought NYCFC was the better team for about 70 minutes. I don't know, you know, what you thought, but I think they really were the better team. The counterattacking style of play that the Timbers are known for, just they never had dangerous opportunities develop from their counterattacks. And I think part of that is NYCFC defended those well, and they were ready for them, and their pressing was really good. And so, it was a little bit of a frustrating game for the home fans for the 70 minutes. But then NYCFC just started to get a little bit tired, and that's when Timbers turned it on, and it was a different game. And, you know, I know that the goal might have been questionable because of a foul that wasn't called, but man, I'm so glad that Timber scored that goal, just for me personally, because I was there amongst the fans, and it was great to see that that place just go nuts. I mean, it went bananas.
You couldn't have
when they scored the goal at the death.
You couldn't script it better. And yes, it should have been disallowed. There was a clear foul in the box. The Portland center back crashed into the, I can't remember the center back for New York. Is it, whatever it is.
The French dude.
He cleared him out, and it should have been called back. I could see why maybe the ref didn't call it in the moment. When VAR reviewed it, it should have been disallowed. But I also appreciate the fact that it's literally 30 seconds from the end of the game in Portland for Portland, and the odds of somebody overturning that becomes almost infinitesimal, and you just go, all right, just let it stand. And it made for great scenes, right? It made for great television.
Unbelievable. It was unbelievable. It was so
loud, one of the loudest environments after the home team scores in any sport or any soccer game that I've attended, just because I think it was a combination of, hey, that's a great venue, and their improvements, their renovation actually, I think, encloses in the noise a little bit better. But then the fact that they scored at the death, I mean, combined with, you know, all that, I think made it for a very loud atmosphere. So, it was awesome.
So what about the weather? The weather never appeared to be the factor that maybe we were all thinking, right, or it had been predicting it was going to be.
Yeah, because the hard driving rain, the one that I was telling you about earlier that was coming in sideways, kind of dissipated and it eased up around 10 in the morning here, like 2 hours before kickoff, right about the time that I started walking towards the stadium. And then it was just a drizzle. The wind died down as well. It was cold, but nothing that these guys aren't used to playing. And the elements, I mean, it's just your standard Sunday EPL game at that point, right? It was really not a factor.
All right. So I do want to ask you, were you, because I saw some back and forth with some of your Spanish-speaking friends on Twitter, were you somewhere near the person that threw the beer can that hit the New York City player after their goal?
I was, because, you know, Peter, I like to sit with the people. I don't like to sit in the hoity-toity perches, because somebody was saying, "Oh, I didn't see Andy there," because they were sitting out in the press area. No, I was out in the stands with the fans, and I was 20 feet from the guy that threw the beer bottle, which
was
terrible.
Were you really?
Yes, he was about 20 feet behind me. I was 7 rows up, and he was about 12 rows up, or 10 rows up.
It seems so weird knowing the stereotype of Portland, that somebody throwing a beer can at an opposing team would be in that stadium. You just don't think those fans are built that way.
Yeah, well, the guy threw it instantly. Everybody starts pointing at him. they don't want to be that team, right? They don't want to be that fan base. And the security comes and they say, "Okay, dude," they didn't say it as nicely as I'm saying it here, but they said, "We got to take you with us."
Did they tase him or hit him with a baton?
Really angry at him, and then he's like, "What? I gotta leave?" It's like, "Yeah, dude."
Was it a kid?
Beer can? No, it's a guy in his 20s.
Kids these days. Because there was actually 2 beer cans that hit the field. Only one of them hit a player, so I don't know where the other one came from.
Yeah, well, somebody might have gotten away with one then.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm glad they apprehended the scofflaw. And hopefully
can't have that, Peter. We can't have that.
Spend a very dangerous and a violating evening in the Portland jail. That's what I'm hoping for.
Well, you know, if this was CONCACAF, Peter, they might be that stadium might be closed next time.
Speaking of CONCACAF, I haven't spoken to you. Have you seen the CONCACAF-y movement that did not pay for a Wolves game earlier today? The Wolves City game?
No.
Oh, what happened?
Jimenez. Yeah, Jimenez. The double yellow. The second yellow.
Did you see the whole thing, though?
Well, I just saw the reason he got the second yellow.
Well, so he, you know, he commits a simple foul, and then he starts doing typical CONCACAF stuff. So he's just holding up play, and he's standing in front of the restart, and then he's kind of, first he kicks the ball away about 5 feet away, and then he stands in front of the restart, and then he moves away, and then he stands, and of course he gets too close when they take it, and that gives him his second yellow. And I thought, see, they're not going to put up with CONCACAF stuff in Ingerland. No.
You got to move it along, Jimenez. Too bad that red doesn't carry to qualifiers, right?
Exactly. You know, the thing was, is I couldn't figure out why the Wolves fans were applauding him as he went off the field. And I couldn't figure out why their coach patted him on the head and butt when he went off, because I'm thinking everybody should be pissed off at that dude. Cause they were, I think it was 0-0 at that point, wasn't it?
It was 0. Yes, it was. And that cost us, getting three points from City, or actually,
cost,
I think,
us.
Liverpool would have passed City, right? Had they tied that game?
Yeah, they would have.
Thanks a lot, Jimenez. He's a good player.
All right. So, Andy, what's the plans for tonight? Are you going to go out and get super drunk and do a lot of cocaine and stuff and hookers and things like that?
Is that Portland or is that Vegas? No, I'm in Portland, Pete. I think it's just pot and good food here, right?
And chicks with armpit hair. Is that
right, exactly. Food trucks and I want to go out and find I'm thinking maybe seafood or like some Asian soup or something like that, because so Portland does have a good food scene.
All right,
sure.
All right. So, but you're going to go and hang out with like the Don Garbers of the world, right?
No, I'm going solo tonight. Oh, okay. Tonight's my night to be a foodie on my own.
Did you see?
That's part of the reason I come to all these cups.
Did you see, or have you met, or were you in the area of, did you see that the lead city football group dude was actually in attendance? He skipped the Manchester City game today and flew all the way in from St. Petersburg when they played in Russia earlier this week.
No.
So he was actually in attendance and he was up in the booth. I can't remember the dude's name.
Oh, wow.
And they took one quick video shot of him and he couldn't have looked more bored.
Oh.
if he was in a doctor's waiting room. Now, that's probably an unfair categorization because it was literally just 5 seconds. He could have had a blast and maybe he'll come out and talk about how impressive the atmosphere was. But it was funny where they were like, oh, so-and-so is here, the big wig of all city football group. Yeah. And they shoot the video of him and he looks like he just couldn't wait to get out of there. But
is that like if it's the Yankees GM and he's at the AA championship or something?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, it would be something like that. Well, I'm glad you had a great
time. No, I'm not allowed near those boxes, Peter. I'm just a fan now these days. So it's solo dining tonight for Swift.
Well, I'm sorry that the kick around has watered you down in your status in soccer circles.
Yeah, exactly. I've been associated with the show and with Peter Welton, and they couldn't like keep me far enough away from them now.
Bad career choice, Swifty.
That's right.
All right, so I'm going to ask you this. You've been to all 26 MLS Cups. Can you... Well, I don't think you could rank them in any way, but do you have a favorite out of all 26?
That's a good question, and I don't think I have a favorite, but I have favorite moments of various ones. This one, there's a favorite moment. This one there's a top 10 favorite moment that came out of this one, and that was obviously the goal at the death and me being with the fans and the place going nuts. That was something great to experience. That was really, really fun. And that made it worth it right there. Those 2 minutes, right? The goal being scored and being among all that. But you know, like the first one is great. The number two was great because DC United was at home, 53,000 at RFK, you know, the home team. We hadn't experienced that in US soccer before. And so that was kind of cool. Seattle's first. The one that DC played at home later against Houston, I think it was 07, when Placido Domingo played the national anthem. That was a goosebump moment. It's funny to hear me say that, right? I mean, you're like, really? An opera singer singing the national anthem, but they timed the flyover just right, and it was the opera singer singing it in the nation's capital. So those are moments that, and then of course in Canada and Toronto with the national anthem, Toronto FC playing, and then FC Dallas playing in 2010. That was memorable because they made it, but
I'm going to ask you if you remember this moment. Do you remember the saddest moment of the 2010 Toronto FC Dallas losing on an own goal to Colorado moment? Do you remember? I will never, ever forget this moment. You were with me when it happened.
I was with you. Was it in the tunnel afterwards?
Yes, we were down by the locker rooms.
Yeah,
and the door opened up and we saw inside and we saw our friend Bobby Hammond. And we saw some of the players and just the scenes inside that locker room, and Bobby in particular, because Bobby's such a good friend of ours, right? We've known Bobby forever. Just the pure look of crushing disappointment and sadness on those guys was, I will never forget that again in my life.
You know, and that reminds me today that do you have a sad spot in your heart for Valeri missing his PK?
Oh, Diego Valeri. Yeah. I thought it would have been storybook if he had hit that shot in the first overtime
that went over.
Yeah. I think a lot of people were surprised they waited so long to put him on.
Right. But why? Once he did was, they say?
Well, I think on... I kind of would say once he went on the field, you kind of figured out why, because he just didn't look very mobile. My other comment of the game that I thought was going to come back to haunt them was the New York's manager not subbing out Maxi Morales, who had been struggling with a calf injury the entire game, and he clearly was not working as hard as he could in the late second half. And I thought, man, they probably need to sub that guy out. And what was funny was Morales was berating the bench right near the end, like at 88th minute. He was like yelling at the bench to make subs to kind of waste time and get some legs on the field. And I thought, man, they need to sub you out because I don't you've got much legs left and you've already been hurt the rest of the time. But he put in a very, very brave performance. And again, Andy, I just have to say, not that I was rooting against Portland. I do think the right result took place because New York rightfully should have won that game in regulation if VAR had done its job and called the foul that took place in the box. But
yeah, I think over the 120 minutes, New York was the better team. Although I gotta tell you, Portland was the much better team at the end and in overtime. And just New York ran out of steam.
No, New York, there was a period of time there where it almost looked like New York was playing a man down. I kept saying that to myself. It was almost
Is that the pressing?
Well, I think they were just tired, man. I think
But is it because of the pressing?
Yeah.
I mean, is that just fatigues them?
Probably. And I think playing on turf changes things too. Yeah. Remember, that's a team that plays half their games on a miniature field. So
that's true. They're running an extra amount. Yeah. Today.
They're running a lot more.
I forget his name now. He's just an engine for Portland, and he kind
Diego
of turned
Chara?
It on. Yes, man. Yeah. What a good player. He's a player you appreciate more live at the stadium than you do on TV because you see how much he moves.
I completely agree with you. His two recovery runs to win the ball back when New York were just heroic. Just stellar.
Unbelievable. Yeah. And you know what? This stadium appreciates that. That's the beauty of this fan base. Not that all fan bases don't, but they have that, some fan bases, no matter where you're sitting in the stadium, because, in some stadiums you have the certain section of the stadium that they're more knowledgeable than the other section, right?
Yeah.
But like everybody is so into the game and knowledgeable of the game, and man, was his play just so appreciated? And when you're in the environment, it's like, man, this is awesome. I think part of it is, here we are in the U.S. and it feels like we're not. It feels like we're abroad, but it's kind of saying, hey, we're kind of arriving as a soccer nation, right? We're getting close to what it's like to experience a game abroad.
Yeah. You know what I hope? I do hope that maybe this championship for New York creates some sort of opening for them to speed up the process of getting their own stadium. I was commenting the other day, the Athletic had a fantastic article about the trials and tribulations of that group trying to get a stadium built in one of the five boroughs. And, I lived in and worked in Manhattan back in the 90s. I've had conversations with people who really know the commercial real estate business in that area, and everybody, even back when Garber announced the team and said we're going to get our own stadium, they're like, that will not happen anytime soon. And the number of the really telling stat, Andy, is that the number of clubs that have built and constructed stadiums in Major League Soccer since New York City FC joined the league is astonishing. And it's like 9, maybe 10 different clubs. Columbus built a second stadium in the time since NYCFC. And I will be surprised if they are able to get that done and have a stadium in the five boroughs by the time, 2030. They keep talking about 2026, but I just don't think that's realistic.
Yeah,
but maybe
difficult.
This helps.
It's a difficult environment in New York, like you said. Now, this does remind me of one observation about today's stadium in Providence Park. Like all these new stadiums that are popping up now around the league, these soccer-specific, or not always soccer-specific, but these great new modern stadiums. Austin, we were just in Austin, right? Mm-hmm. It's a great stadium.
Yeah, yeah.
Providence Park is an old stadium. It's an old minor league baseball park. That they've renovated a couple times. It's old. It's narrow. Like the vomitories are narrow. The concession areas are narrow.
The vomitories?
Yeah. What you use to get into the stands.
I've never heard that term before. I like it.
That
though.
Comes from the Coliseum.
Yeah, it's very.
Yeah, the concourses are narrow.
Everything is very cramped and narrow. I completely agree.
But it's an awesome stadium, which just says, hey, it doesn't have to be ultra modern, super new for it to be a great environment and a good stadium. They've done a really good job with what they had. Now, Also, I have a question for you. When it was the last four teams in MLS, were you secretly hoping that Salt Lake beat Portland and New York would win so that Yankee Stadium would host MLS Cup and you just wanted to see that?
No, I was frightened that was going to happen because I really feel like that would have been a real black mark on the league. I mean, the fact that they have to play games there at all after all this time still, I think is a real black mark on the league. And I think it would have been criminal if they had held their championship game there. There have been many people that have predicted that in fact, if they had won that game and won the rights, they were going to end up playing it at Red Bull Arena.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there was some word about that because there's so many people were freaking out about playing on the trapezoid postage stamp that they play on. So I don't know if that's true or not, but whatever.
How mad is Red Bull and their fans now? They've 26 years in. No championships.
Yeah.
And their rivals across town.
Yeah.
Get a trophy.
Dallas, New England, and Red Bull, New York Red Bull are the three remaining original franchises that have yet to win MLS Cup.
Hey, so the last seven MLS Cups, either Seattle or Portland
have played in it
from the West. Jeez. But before that, the 6 years prior to that, five of the six, it was either the Galaxy or FC Dallas. So, you know.
Okay, don't make it sound like Dallas was in there a lot. They were in there the one time.
Well, still.
Okay. That's a good spin there, Andrew. Good for you.
Thanks.
That's quality. That's quality spin.
Yeah.
Well, man, I'm so proud of you. I admire your tenacity and going to this thing year in and year out. I hope you get to do this thing forever. I just think it's the coolest streak to be on, and eventually you're going to be the only one, right? You are going to be Lamar Hunt's widow.
We'll see. But they're fine, and there's always, like I said, you know, there's everyone gives you a good memory. Everyone, you feel like, okay, that was the reason why I came, right? And today had that moment. And then I get to try the food in some towns that are,
you know what? I dream that in someday in the future, it'll be MLS Cup like 50 or something. And at halftime, and this will be in Manhattan because this will be when NYCFC finally has their own stadium for the first time, and they're in MLS Cup finals, and they're the hosting team, and they wheel you out in a wheelchair at halftime, and they'll say, "This is Andy Swift. He's at his 50th MLS Cup or something
and
like that."
And I kind of just waved to the crowd. Yeah,
you kind of you could barely raise your hand and could barely take your hat off, and everybody gets, you know,
I'll be happy that I'm alive, let alone that.
Oh, yeah, you'll totally have like oxygen in your nose and everything like that.
Cool. All right. Well, let's make that happen, Peter.
Well, thanks for making the time, dude. I'm happy for you.
Sorry I wasn't in the elements. I was running out of battery, so I hurried back to my room, but
no worries.
Turned out to be better. We could actually have a conversation this week.
Yeah. Well, take more pictures, tweet more stuff, and congratulations.
Food.
And thanks for doing that. All right. Well, thanks, Andy, for doing that. And thank you, P1s. We love and adore you. Go on, get out there, get stuck in, and win your 50s.